You're listening to Radio Freethinker, episode 74.
Baby, do you understand me now? Yes, sometimes I seem a little mad. But don't you know that no life can always be an angel? And when things go wrong, I seem a little mad. You know, sometimes, baby, I'm so carefree with a joy that is hard to hide. Then sometimes, seems all I have to do is worry.
Hello and welcome to Radio Free Thinker, the radio show podcast that promotes skepticism and critical thinking right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is Ethan, your free thinking historian and executive director of CFI Vancouver.
And I'm Don, your political science philosopher.
This is Rob, cognitive psychologist and moving outer.
And this is Daniel, president of the UBC Freethinkers Club and actually here.
Daniel!
So, Daniel, how was Gitmo? I heard you had a fun time in Cuba. Is that where you were been for the last 6 months?
Technically, Gitmo is actually U.S. territory, so I never really left the U.S. I mean...
So all those people who didn't know, Vancouver is now apparently part of the U.S.
Well, there's Point Roberts, which kind of...
We've annexed you.
I see.
Speaking of excitement, Ethan... You had an exciting Friday, didn't you, or something?
Well, I've actually had a really exciting weekend, actually, now that you mentioned that, Don. For those of you who were living under a rock, this past little week, CFI Vancouver has had some pretty awesome events. On Friday, we had the one and only P.Z. Myers here in Vancouver and in Abbotsford. He gave two exciting talks, and it was just fantastic. He has a reputation of being something of a controversial skeptic and
a religion baiter?
Perhaps. So maybe people were expecting a fire-breathing P.Z. Myers, but I think might have been surprised to find him interesting, humorous, and quite friendly here at UBC.
Did he have a picket sign?
There was no picket signs. But the talk was attended by over 300 people. It was a massive success. And the general theme seemed to revolve around how we need to call ourselves atheists, how we need to stand up as non-believers and make no... What's the word?
Qualms.
Qualms, yes, about making it clear what we don't believe in.
What if you're an agnostic, though? Does he just hate agnostics?
Be quiet.
there's no way of knowing for sure.
Well, I mean, if anyone attended the talk, he did get some questions, and I think that generally the way he sort of characterized agnosticism was not far enough. I think that he was not disrespectful of agnostics. He wasn't disrespectful of religious people. But he was saying basically that atheism is a necessary step, that in order to break down the stereotypes and the stigma, it's important to be strong in our stance. So if you're agnostic, if you're truly agnostic, then by all means, that's what you are. But if you are secretly an atheist, but you don't want to offend somebody, then you might want to reevaluate that position.
This was the talk at UBC, right?
That's right. At the talk in Abbotsford, P.Z. discussed sort of the role of science and religion. Basically, as he summarized it, how religion is always wrong, and science, while not always right, at least has a track record of correcting itself. And he talked about the God of the Gaps theory, various ways that people have tried to make the biblical version of creation sound scientific and ultimately have failed in the face of overwhelming scientific evidence. And it was just a very, very interesting talk. It was attended by about 30 to 40 people. You know, Abbotsford is a very religious community. I thought maybe you'd see some protesters or some crazy people, but actually really well attended. Lots of interesting discussion afterwards. It was a very productive and, I think, awesome talk.
Sweet.
Yeah, I find it funny in some ways that, you know, religion often gets it wrong because you think because they're making it up, you know, you could get it right at least once in a while, you know. I mean, that's the problem with science. Science has to... Yeah, okay, I'll shut up now.
Well, after the talk, we had a reception. where people got to hang out with PZ and have some drinks, and it was a lot of fun. And there was a lot of interesting discussion on a more personal level, including a very odd discussion about tentacle sex.
Hooray!
Which, for some reason, PZ really wanted us to mention on the show.
So if you're listening, PZ, there you go.
There you go, buddy. By the time the bar closed, we felt that we hadn't spent enough time drinking with PZ, so we went to the Railway Club for some post-drink drinking. And when they kicked us out around 3 a.m., we kind of called it a night and headed home.
Nice informal skeptics in the pub.
Exactly.
You went home from some private tentacle sex. Is that
what? Well, I didn't, but I don't know where everyone else went. I'm not going to judge them because what they do in their own time is up to them. PZ wrote about us on his popular blog, Ferlingula.
Ferlingula.
And Ferlingulated us and mentioned several times Vancouver and CFI, so thanks, PZ. And you know what he also mentioned?
The CFI presence at the Pride Parade?
That's right, Rob. As everyone knows, the Pride Parade is a very popular attraction here in Vancouver. It's an opportunity for people to come out and celebrate civil liberties and the rights of individuals here in Vancouver. And as humanists and skeptics, we have a strong connection to that goal. So we were there with the BC Humanists and the SFU Skeptics. And they had their big hit, the banner that is now famous, the "There's Probably No God, Now Stop Worrying and Enjoy Your Life," which got some rousing cheers from the attended crowds. It was a great success, lots of fun, a beautiful day, and I hope people saw us there, and if you did, and waved, and we waved back, and it was lots of fun.
Very colorful, but a little hot.
It was very, very warm.
And so gay.
But in a good way.
Yes, definitely. Well, I think it's time, though, we talked about some of the great things that are going on. We have to talk about some of the bad things that have been going on. Last week, we are well aware of the technical problems that plagued that episode. There were some pretty bad sound issues. And it's a technical problem here at CITR. It's happened to a few of the other shows, if listeners have been listening to them as well. We're working on the problem. We haven't quite figured out what it is yet. When we figure it out, we will solve it. Rest assured, we are working on it. We also have to warn our listeners that due to other technical problems, unrelated technical problems, but problems nonetheless, the podcast will not be on CITR's feed this week, so it won't be on iTunes. We are recording it. It will be on our webpage, www.radiofreethinker.com. Check it out there.
Though I suppose if you're listening to this after the live broadcast, you've already figured that out. So well done, you.
Yes. We are on the air, as far as I know.
And for those of you who did subscribe to iTunes, you're not listening to us now. Well,
Is really cool.
This is confusing us.
Well, actually, I have a little thing here. If you are listening live, some of you may know that I am giving a lecture on Friday from at the Rio. It's part of a lecture series called New Bite Lights. It's going on at 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. If you want to get free tickets, I'm giving away tickets. Just email us during this live broadcast. Or the first 5 people to email us after the broadcast will also get free tickets. And so, I'll re-explain that at the end of the broadcast.
Can I email and get all 5 tickets?
Can I get a free ticket?
Yeah, sure.
So really there's only like 2 free tickets left.
No, one to all of us. All of you get free tickets outside
an additional
of the free
tickets. To the 5 other tickets.
I don't have to email you while talking on the air.
Better get on that.
Should we pull over the studio before we email? Because we shouldn't email.
Right. Well, speaking of emails, it's time to look into our oft-overflowing email bag once again.
Well, we should mention the email address, radio.freethinker@gmail.com.
That's right. And last week we were talking about ear candles and Health Canada with Dr. Reiki from the Skeptic Zone podcast. So we got an email. I will read some of it to you right now. Hi guys, I recently started listening to the podcast and I think you guys are doing a great job. Yay! On the last episode, I heard you were talking with Dr. Reiki about ear candles, and there was a little confusion about their legal status in Canada. I'm sure you probably got this all sorted out, but as you were saying, you were getting into touch with Health Canada about ear candles in your local pharmacies. But just in case, there are bans on the importation of ear candles in Canada. Within Canada, ear candles themselves are not technically banned or illegal, but they are regulated by Health Canada under medical devices legislation, and therefore require a license to sell. Since Health Canada hasn't issued any licenses for the sale of ear candles, anyone selling them is doing so illegally. And this is from Dave in Niagara. So, Dave, thanks for writing in. And he's actually right. I checked with Health Canada as well, and as I can quote from their webpage, Health Canada's medical device regulations state that certain types of medical devices, including ear candles, require a license from Health Canada before anyone can sell them for therapeutic purposes, and Health Canada has not issued any licenses for ear candles. Therefore, the sale of this product for therapeutic purposes in Canada is illegal.
So if on the box it says this is strictly for entertainment purposes, they could sidestep the law.
Actually, that's something we were confused about, but it turns out, no. Quoting again from Health Canada, some promoters try to get around Health Canada's medical device regulations by advertising that ear candles are, quote, for entertainment purposes only.
That they actually tried to do that?
However, Health Canada maintains that these people are selling their product illegally for medical purposes, and there is no other reasonable use for ear candles. So, good skeptical win for Health Canada. Now, Dave also mentions another bit of news about medical woo called CanLime. And the idea behind this is that they are pushing this idea that there is a conspiracy to cover up the true incidence of Lyme disease in Canada.
And that's something that comes up a lot among alternative health practitioners. They say that everyone has Lyme disease, they diagnose it all the time, and they say that whatever they're peddling cures it.
Well, exactly. That's because one of the main symptoms of Lyme disease is an indescriptive pain. Like you get, you know, just you feel pain, but there's no real, it's not localized or anything.
Right. And Dave provided us with some links to this, which I'm going to do some research on, and we're probably going to talk about this in a future show. So thanks, Dave, again. If you have any ideas on subjects, ideas, things that you've heard that you want us to look into, feel free to email us and let us know, and we'll gladly look into them.
And actually, on that subject, someone else, I'm afraid I forget their name, sent an email about a little skeptical event happening in Surrey. It started last week, and the main event happened on Monday. And basically what was happening was that the Tarkshiel Cultural Society in Surrey is an Indian rationalist group. And they are saying that astrologers take advantage of superstitious people. And they decided to set up an event that if any astrologers could prove that they actually had supernatural powers by answering 10 questions based on an astrological chart, then the Cultural Society would award them $100,000. The event happened this Monday, and apparently the banquet hall that they rented out was packed with Indian rationalists, and it was all done in Punjabi. Unfortunately, no astrologers showed up. Who could have predicted?
Well, they did have some really nice tea.
Apparently, one of the possible confounding factors in this was that just so they could prevent just anybody from showing up, they each astrologer had to give a $1,000 security deposit, which would, you know, presumably be given back to them whether they succeeded or not. But nobody showed up, so there's no way of telling.
Well, you know, we can do our own little thing here, right? So if any psychics are out there and they can predict what we're going to talk about after the commercial, we'll give them $100,000 in Monopoly money.
Monopoly money?
Well,
that's expensive. You got to buy that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, I'd spring it. If they can guess what we're going to talk about next after this commercial.
Have we not posted what we're talking about? Usually we do. This could be a dangerous bet.
Yeah. Well, it could cost us like $10, $15.
Unless we get the prediction during the commercial break, I don't think we have to worry.
Well, let's go to that commercial break right now. And if you're a psychic, call in and let us know.
Why, sometimes I'd like to take a peppermint and a switchblade and a Cadillac and throw it all in a fire.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Radio for crazy people and the elderly. Oh, yeah.
CITR has more friends than ever before. We've partnered with tons of local businesses to bring you great discounts in the communities where you live, work, and play. Maybe Main Street is your main drag. Present your friends of CITR card at Red Cat Records, Lucky's Comics, Devil May Wear, Thriller, Blim, The Kiss Store, The Wallflower Modern Diner, RX Comics, Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Vinyl Records, Regional Assembly of Text, and Twig and Hottie to receive fabulous discounts. So become a CITR member, get a free friends card, and feel the love.
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker. So, Daniel, tell us about blackberries. What's up with them?
Well, I have a really nice blackberry phone. No, wait, that's not what we're talking about. A few days ago, a news story came out that India and the United Arab Emirates were really pushing RIM, the makers of BlackBerry phones, to basically unlock the phone security features for those governments. With other phones, they can listen into calls. Actually, you can listen to calls on BlackBerry, but listen or look at emails that are being sent, look at messages that are being sent between each other, and look at what they're doing on internet browsing. And these governments like to keep track of their citizens. But BlackBerry's, they encrypt the data you're sending out on your phone and don't decrypt it until it gets to another phone. So governments can't, they can't spy on what you're doing, at least not easily. I'm sure code crackers somewhere would break through it, but for the most part, it's really difficult for them. And so both of these governments are like, yeah, we don't want this in our country, and are using their telecom regulators to put pressure on RIM to open it up. A few days ago, RIM was saying that they were going to stand firm and not open it up for them, that they believed in people's inalienable rights for free communication.
Hooray, a Canadian company standing up for the rights of citizens and privacy.
And a whole bunch of governments were behind them, at least in words, like the Canadian government, the U.S. government, even though they have a Patriot Act that allows them to spy on it. So they're hypocritical, but they were standing behind them. And today they backed down. They basically waited, in my opinion, they waited until they had other news on the plate to hopefully distract people. They have a fancy new phone coming in, a new OS version. But,
wow.
Yeah, they sort of hid the news that, okay, we're just going to do what these governments tell us to do now.
And boo!
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed. Yesterday I was all like, yes, go RIM, you guys are awesome, but they suck like every other cell phone company.
So what kind of pressure were the governments putting on them? Were they just going to, like, make sure that no one would ever buy a BlackBerry again?
No, they were basically just going to, the United Arab Emirates was going to shut down email, BlackBerry Messenger, and web browsing on all BlackBerry phones, basically taking out all the reasons people would want a BlackBerry.
Well, I thought from the news sites I was reading, they said that the big reason and why they could cave in wasn't so much that this encryption was on the phone, but the servers, the RIM servers, weren't in the United Arab Emirates, and therefore they don't have control over them and they can't do this. I even had heard, and I laughed at this, that apparently the Saudi government or the United Arab Emirates government did an email to all RIM customers saying that they had this new software update. And what the update was actually spyware. So when you installed it, it actually installed spyware onto your phone so the government could keep tabs on what you were doing.
Yeah, the funny thing is they actually called this security update. it's true, because in the United Arab Emirates, the main telecom operators are heavily owned by the government, like they are in, say, countries like China. So they basically can do that if they want. And the way phones work is carriers can sort of just push updates to the phones that you pretty much have to take. So almost like RIM couldn't do that much other than like just backing out of the market. But
as far as personal information goes, I mean, there's something to be said for privacy, but at the same time, so many people using things like BlackBerries have all of their private information available publicly on Facebook. Just last week, this massive amount of personal and private information from Facebook was taken from Facebook because it was publicly available because people didn't understand the privacy settings, and is available to download as a massive torrent that you just get all these people's information.
That is true, but the thing with BlackBerries in these countries is people are definitely using them because they are so private and out of the reach of the government, whereas people using Facebook should at least know that what they're doing is public if their settings aren't private.
Well, also, too, in these countries, the way they filter the security is much more simplistic. I mean, they block websites or whatever, whereas if you have encrypted data, it's much harder to prevent quote-unquote bad people from doing things from good people. And the way technology has really changed the scene in some of these countries, I mean, let's look at the way the Green Revolution went on in Iran during the last election. I mean, it didn't work or anything, but I mean, cell phone technology and that sort of thing.
Twitter was huge in that.
Yeah, but you said they didn't stand up, but what about Google? Google stood up to China, so, I mean, you could do that, can't you? I mean,
yeah, Google did more or less stand up to China. It took some prodding and a lot of, like, angry customers of Google here in North America and other places, but they did eventually stand up and stop filtering searches like Tiananmen Square, where instead of pictures of the like horrible like government crackdown that you'd see if we search for it, you'd just see like wonderful, nice pictures of a beautiful square
and pictures of, you know, police officers blocking people's cameras with their umbrellas.
Yes.
you know, this reminds me of a new project Google's been involved at that people probably have heard about. It's called Recorded Futures. Now, this is a startup company. It's a sort of a site that archives websites, blogs, and Twitter feeds, right? I mean, it sounds okay. One of the points of this thing is to provide, you know, improved searches, to target information and to do data mining. Again, sounds pretty okay.
Kind of a thing like the Internet Wayback Machine, like web.archive just takes everything and makes it indexable.
Well, it seems that way, but then it takes a bit of a nefarious turn, because then it turns out that the other partner in this joint venture that there is the CIA. And the CIA, CIA has a startup, has a venture company called InQ Info, I think it's called.
We all know that the CIA, they just want a successful startup company to make lots of money. It can't be anything nefarious.
You know, well, because they are having apparently one of the big things about this project, or maybe the only reason for it, is the idea of surveillance and predictive enforcement, which I love the term predictive enforcement.
Like in Minority Report?
Well, you know, some blogs have...
That was an awful movie.
...have cast it like that. Because apparently one of the things it's supposed to do is it data mines all this information that it gets, and then it finds, quote-unquote, invisible links between documents, and then predicts the curve by showing online momentum. Now, you know,
what does any of this mean?
Well, if they're invisible, how could it find
them? Well, exactly. And when you think about it, I mean, in the old days, you know, if they convicted you of a crime, you go to a court and they have to prove it. Now, if they suspect you might do something, they put a security order on you, and we joked it before, you go to Gitmo, or in Canada, you go some places,
well,
too.
The CIA has always kind of been doing that to some extent. Like, they will go after people before they have done anything, expecting that they will do something if they see them posting.
But now they're collaborating with a company that has a lot of information
on
people.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, one, you know, Google's motto, do no evil. But two, I mean, Google is developing a very special place in our society, at least modern society. I mean, how many people here use Google every day for everything? In fact, I had to stop myself. When I was doing research for this, I suddenly realized I was doing it with Google. And I'm sitting there saying, well, maybe the results I'm getting aren't exactly the most unbiased results.
I think Rob is doomed. He has an Android phone.
Oh no.
But I don't know. What do you guys think about this collaboration of something that is so fundamental to now our everyday? I mean, this is almost like the phone companies, which, well, I mean, they do. But I mean, it seems...
I'd be careful to suspect that Google is going to be using like its private data without getting permission from people. I assume it's going to be looking at publicly available stuff and then maybe making inferences from it that it shouldn't, but it's not going to be like data mining into your private search history, I assume.
There is actually Google allows everyone to do this, to go into their settings on the Google searches and stuff and basically say what it can and cannot look at. And also, for your own websites, you can add in a robots.txt file that basically says, don't index this. And if they do, then you can go after them.
Well, one of the weird things that I found in my research, and again, you know, I'm not saying that there's fire where there's smoke or anything, but apparently Google started dealing with the CIA after Google had a few internet attacks on its servers, and it was having trouble maintaining its security, so it called in the CIA and the National Defense System to help protect it from this. And then once sort of that favor was done, Google seemed to suddenly start doing projects with the Defense Department afterwards, and it just... be smart, be aware.
All of these stories bring up like interesting questions about the role of technology in ensuring free speech and basic freedom of information, where like on one hand, certain things like Google have allowed us so much access to all this information freely and easily. But at the same time, could it, in the end, make it super easy for someone to track all of this?
Well, you know, and the big thing, and this we'll touch upon later, I think, I don't really mind so much that the CIA or CSIS or whatever gets this information, right? I mean, in some ways, you know, big government can be helpful. But one of the things that's coupled with it and where things can become interwovenly dangerous is you get something like the Patriot Act, and you got in Canada, we have similar acts, where you no longer have the process of law and where suspicion and circumstantial evidence can be as good as real evidence and can have a major effect. So a computer glitch, you know, in this program, that programming that these guys are coming up with, if they make some misconnections between some documents, then, you know, we could all just suddenly disappear under security orders.
Yeah, like, if they're making this kind of information, you know, they're getting it from publicly or even privately available information online, they should at least make their information about how they get it publicly available so that people can make sure that it didn't get skewed somewhere down the line. But I mean, some people think that the radical sort of transparency that new technology is making possible means the death of privacy, like the end of it. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg, the head of Facebook, you know, gave a talk or something recently where he basically said right up, you know, this is the end of privacy. Facebook lets people make publicly available a lot of information, and it's useful to make it available to other websites so that, you know what other people in Facebook are liking and how it's all connected. And
then he got pissed off when his private information accidentally snuck on because he couldn't understand his own company's privacy policy.
Turnabout is fair play.
Well, I mean, I think we're kind of perhaps seeing a bit of a teeter-totter in this regard. We're seeing right now, I think, the high point is open information, easily accessible, and maybe a disparaging copyright and privacy. You know, I mean, things like torrents and file sharing is popular now than it's ever been. And I think perhaps one of the reasons is I was just at a movie recently. They play about 20 minutes of ads and gouge you on popcorn. People are annoyed about that sort of thing. But you might see that shift again, especially if things like Google starts sharing your web history with the CIA, maybe people will suddenly go, yeah, you know what, privacy's kind of good.
Yeah, even Google, like, they have to give up stuff if a Patriot Act request is done, and they have done it many times.
Right.
You know, there's one thing just to sort of close. I was listening to one of my podcasts, and they were talking about one of the weird effects about all this lack of privacy or whatever, is that we're going to become a much more forgiving society. Because you're going to have, you know, teens, preteens or whatever, going to go into Facebook, they're going to put up their pictures of them doing who knows what. And then 20 years later, they're going to be looking for a job, and someone's going to do a Google search on them, if Google's still around, and going to find all this. And our tolerance for indiscretion is just, by necessity, going to have to. But I think ultimately what you do is you need a checks and balances, because you never know who's going to be leaking information out there.
You exactly. Never know who's going to be looking at it.
Well, why don't we go to a commercial break, and we'll be back with more on Radio Free Thinker.
Robots need love too.
This is Dan Mangan, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 in Vancouver and surrounding university area.
They want to be loved by robots, need love too. They want to be loved by you.
Yeah, the state of hip-hop right now, man, as far as the way I see it, I think right now, hip-hop is advancing as far as skills. You got brothers, you know what I'm saying, getting, like, more witty.
There ain't nobody to be pretty for. Let it rattle, let the clatter kill him, let the cataclysm wash. Who really listens? Precision with a verse draws a cry. Draw a line between an easy melody and peace of mind.
You got DJs doing all kind of crazy shit on the turntables. I like where it's going, and I like, you know what I'm saying, the creative process that brothers is trying to take it to right now.
Rally Rails and Brendan Butter in the place to be. Crimes and Treasons Radio, 101.9 FM, Vancouver, CITR.ca, every Tuesday, 9 till 11.
Dynamite!
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker. So we've been talking about privacy, security, all these interesting matters. What else can you tell us about this, Don?
Well, you know, I came to a realization the other night that the world is controlled by an elite. It is. No,
The Freemasons?
No.
Illuminati?
No. No, I, you know,
Elite spelled in hacker speak.
It's not even Republicans. It's just there are like millions of civil servants and politicians and executives who have access to information, who have the capacity to do things that are just out of our normal reach. You know, I mean, when you fill out your income tax forms, there are people who know your income tax forms, and we trust them. Like they can literally control some things that go on with our lives.
And when you fill out the census, they know how many rooms you have in your house.
Bedrooms, no less.
Yes.
So there's been a lot of talk recently about a group out there called WikiLeaks. And basically their point is, well, let me tell you why they're in the news first. They released 1,500 documents to the UK's Guardian, Germany's Der Spiegel, and the American New York Times, and they sort of synchronized the release of the articles and their web release so that it all happens at the same time about the Afghan war. And these are low-level sort of, they're secret, which is a low level of importance, but it's more than public. Things like, today we went to Kandahar, we bought chips, we shot four people, and it took us five rounds of ammunition to do this, right? I mean,
really? They put their chip buying with the civilian shooting?
Well, not in the same line, but I mean, it's sort of that level of mundane form. I mean, everyone talks about paperwork and government paperwork. Well, this is that very sort of grunt labor level of paperwork. Not all of it, but most of it. And the New York Times, because it lives in a litigious nation called the United States of America, actually went to the Pentagon first and said, listen, we got these documents, and this is the story we're going to write. Do you guys have any big issue with it? And they said, well, it's terribly wrong that someone got this information, but what you're writing doesn't, and I quote, put lives at risk or jeopardize them. Right? Because there are some moral implications to what WikiLeaks does. So there's been a lot of reaction to this whole thing. It's called the Afghan War Diaries. Now, in Europe, most of them are focusing on the idea of the loss of innocent lives, because a lot of these say someone was riding a motorcycle, we didn't like their looks, so we shot them, right? And it turned out they were just someone going to grandma's house with cookies, and there was no actual threat from them. These are the kind of things they report. And a lot of them are first-hand reports, so they're not always 100% accurate, but they're always the first response kind of thing. Progressive news groups in the United States, like Democracy Now! And all that, pretty much, you know, reiterate the loss of life, the idea that the war isn't going good, and the popular press points out that, you know, we can't trust the Pakistani government because they used to be in bed with the Taliban. Very interesting how each one of these groups are looking at the very same documents, but they're coming out with very, very different things. I thought it was really interesting, though, NPR, which is sort of the American version of, well, it's the radio version of public radio, yeah, PBS. They spend a lot of time worrying about the word of efficacy and reliability. And if you listen to theirs, they have many times a very negative attitude towards the process, which I think is an important aspect to talk about. Now, WikiLeaks itself describes itself as a multi-jurisdictional public service designed to protect whistleblowers, journalists, and activists who have sensitive material to communicate to the public. Now, they refer to themselves as principled leakers. So there is an important aspect to their philosophy, is they get documents in, and they just don't publish them. They go through, they vet them. There has to be original source material type thing, and it has to be verified. So you just can't go up there and say, hey, these are a whole bunch of things I got, and let's just publish them. So they do that. And they also will go through and they'll redact them, because if you sat there and if I sent them in a list of 10 informants on the mob in Sicily, right, they would take out the names of the people or anything that might identify them, because they think the information is important to be out there, but they're not stupid about it, and they don't want to actually endanger anyone's lives as best as they can.
They have made it clear, though, at least the founder has, that he doesn't care about governments. He doesn't care. He doesn't even believe in their authority. So anything that endangers governments specifically, he doesn't care about. However, people, he's not going to put people in harm's way.
Individual people.
Yeah.
They were in the news just a little while ago for something else, where they leaked a video of helicopters,
yeah, they
fire killing innocent people in Afghanistan.
This is believed to be part of the same cache of documents, and they've got over 91,000 documents from a particular source, or maybe there's more than one source. Again, one of the big things about WikiLeaks is you anonymously provide the documents, so they don't really care who you are. They want to make sure the documents are valid, but they don't care who gives them to them.
But there was a whole thing where the government, U.S. government and Army tried to figure out who leaked the documents to them, and some guy from the Army got arrested or detained or something like that. And
yep, that's all part of it. And the big, again, one of the moral aspects about this is a lot of people are saying, well, you're complaining and you're trying to find out who did the leaking. And sure, maybe that is one issue, but look at what we've uncovered. So in that particular video you're mentioning of, when it was originally reported, it was reported that American soldiers took on a gang of insurgents and accidentally killed two reporters. But when you look at the video, and granted, it's not as clear-cut as some lefties would like to put it, but it wasn't a gang of that. You had to really interpret the situation in order to get that out of it. What it was a family and then a bunch of onlookers trying to rescue people from it, because there were three specific incidents of shooting in it. And you have the gun guy saying, can I shoot him? Can I shoot him? I mean, they're really jazzed would be the word. Now, I don't want to condemn them. I mean, they were in military operations. They had been under fire beforehand, right? But the idea is that the spin story you got was very politically motivated. Whereas when you see the raw footage, you might come to the exact same. I mean, you might look at it and say, okay, these guys were totally justified. But you now have the same information that the government officials had. And it helps you determine, are your government officials being honest or are they being dogmatic?
Yeah. So is that, sorry to interrupt.
It's about like a level of trust. Now, I doubt many people would go as far to say the government can't have any secrets. But I think most people would say that you have to be able to trust them that the secrets they are actually holding are important. And I don't think I could, and I don't think many people can, especially with like the U.S. government. A lot of the stuff that they're holding back, there's no real security reasons they should be holding it back. It's just,
it makes them look
bad. It makes them look bad.
Well, that's a sort of a point that I was going to mention a bit later, but sort of getting back to what Daniel, you initially said about, like, if something is secret for national security, that's one thing. But there's also the other aspect of secret for the sake of protecting government military advancement. For example, suppose government is investing like $5 billion in building a new jet engine, and it gets leaked to a private company that says, okay, now we have the scoop on this, we can build our own, and nullifies sensitive research that the government has spent billions of taxpayer money on. That's an example of a leak that could really cost the taxpayer a lot of money. Now, you might say, well, that should be public knowledge anyway, and that's a separate debate, but the point is, there can be sensitive information that's not necessarily pivotal for national security, but is very important for financial or other reasons.
And the question is, I mean, you said that WikiLeaks has their philosophy of not causing, you know, harm with their leaks. How do we know that they're deciding it properly?
Well, first of all, I think one of the aspects to adjust what Ethan had said, you kind of contradict yourself a little bit, because you said, what if someone gets the information for these engine plans and another company gets it? So they somehow have got this secret information, which is true. But one of the things WikiLeaks does is it makes it public. So it's just not the other company that gets it. It's all other companies that get it. So you know, the government invested in the technology. That technology is still there, and it's still accessible to the government. The only company that people who are going to suffer is perhaps the private co-industry, which has its other issues. But what if, at the same time, you spent $5 billion on this engine, and you release the schematics, and the schematics shows that this engine could never, ever possibly work, and it's just been a money pit for this one private company?
Right. You can spin the situation any way you want. The point I'm trying to make, though, is that there are other reasons, not necessarily related to national security, that you want something kept secret. And there could be any manner of reason in which you're spending taxpayer money or you're investing in some kind of government project that you just don't want to be made public for whatever reason. So there are financial reasons, and of course, there are people whose jobs rely on these particular problems. So, I mean, you know, they may not get killed, but they might get fired.
Well, there is another thing, and this is, I think, really the crux of the whole issue, is the idea of checks and balances. Now, you know, we do trust governments to make a certain amount of, you know, top secret. If top secret's top secret, it's probably top secret for a good reason. And 9 out of 10 times, that's true. you have to remember a lot of times where the source of this material comes from. I mean, there are some, but actually they're fairly rare, hackers who go out there and break into things. For example, one of the things they're famous for is they hacked into Sarah Palin's private Yahoo account, right? And they got her emails. And actually, they discovered something quite interesting. They discovered she was doing public business on her private email account, which is against the Information Act, because it's designed to prevent corruption. Not that she was necessarily involved in corruption, but that's why they're there. But the people who usually do this are insiders. And usually, there are people who sit there and say, listen, I have access to this information, and I know there's something going on. I know I'm an engineer of engines, and I know this is just a money pit, and I don't feel comfortable doing with this. But I don't want to lose my job. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to come out with, you know, to the New York Times and say, hey, listen, this here. So WikiLeaks provide people who are internal who feel morally obligated to do this. And that's true. Just like most people who are morally motivated will probably do the right thing. But not always. Mm-hmm. But that's the check to government will usually do the right thing, but not always. There's a check and balance here.
Yeah, you mean you have to think about it. Like these are people who are probably going to lose their jobs they're definitely going to lose their jobs if anyone finds this out. So they must feel like there's an incredibly good moral reason for them to put their own self-interest behind giving this out to WikiLeaks.
Unless they were paid to do it by foreign agencies.
Well, true.
Espionage is a huge problem.
If you do look at WikiLeaks history, though, there's never been much posted that is top secret for reasons of, like, protecting informants or protecting, like, national security greatly. It has been pretty much things that people probably should be allowed to know.
Well, ironically enough, industrial espionage and secret governments, they don't actually like WikiLeaks either, because once it becomes public, it no longer has value as a secret. So right. So if you get this information and you're using it, you want it for bad reasons, you're probably going to try and keep it secret yourself.
As just an aside, the fact that leaks happen and that people feel like insiders feel morally obligated to give away the secrets and expose them to the public is usually the kiss of death for most long and large conspiracy theories, because people can't shut their mouths.
Right. Well, let's shut our mouths for a commercial break. We'll be back with more on Radio Free Thinker.
Are you a UBC student taking first year economics, math, chemistry, or physics?
That stuff is hard.
Are you feeling like you need some tutoring? That's okay, because the AMS offers free and appointment tutoring for students in these subjects.
Whoa! How does it work?
It's on a first-come, first-served basis, and there's no need to sign up. Just show up with your books and your questions.
Whoa! When does it happen?
Monday to Thursday from 3 to 7 at the Sub Pacific Spirit Cafeteria, located beside the Starbucks.
Whoa!
A+, here I come.
And we're back on Radio Freethinker talking about WikiLeaks and the implications. Are they good? Are they bad? Are they horrible and evil?
You know, there's one thing I wanted to bring in here, because this is something I should have talked about a little earlier. Some of the things that leaking does we think are good, and some we question a little bit. I'm going to mention just quickly two other incidences that WikiLeaks is famous for. One is called the Minton Report, which is an internal document done by a company called which is a petroleum manufacturing heavy metals type company. And it was internally talking about how it was dumping toxic waste in Ivory Coast, right? Now, this leaked out, and it became the center of a bunch of lawsuits that forced this company to do right by the people of the Ivory Coast. Good. Now, the bad, or maybe bad, is WikiLeaks is also one of the people who hosted the ClimateGate emails. So, and everyone here has said, oh, that's so bad. But in a way, it kind of proves a point that even when they do something that might be sort of in the negative, it worked out good. Because once these documents got out there and we got past the spin, you know, we can say now that, okay, they're public. We now know sort of without much doubt that although their scientists are human, their science is still valid and rational.
Yeah, three independent reviews found that there was no wrongdoing on the part of scientists other than they're not very good at PR. And everyone could look at the letters and emails for themselves and check.
Although,
so is this just a case of with WikiLeaks, the truth will out?
Well, the thing is, that's sort of been, I think, one of the worst disasters for climate science, because we may never recover from that. Skepticism of global climate change has risen dramatically since that event and hasn't come back down yet.
Let's look at it honestly, though. Skepticism of climate change has been increasing for a while. So
it,
sure, that
it
was
went really up
but
though, for
it,
that.
It wasn't something that came out of nowhere. It was something that people latched onto because they were already becoming sterile.
Sure.
Yeah. And we do now we have something to point to. Everyone says, well, you know, hey, it's all a big conspiracy. You say, well, no, look, here's something. And it's you guys dug this information up, like, not us.
Imagine even more information was more freely available than it was now. I'm sure there's always some people who will latch onto it as a conspiracy theory. But for reasonable people, the more information you have, the more sure you can be of the outcome. And we can now be more sure that there isn't a conspiracy by climate scientists than we could before these emails came out.
Although in the fog of war, do you get that kind of luxury of being able to figure things out later? I mean, a lot of these things, again, are soldiers' personal reports on the ground. And like I mentioned before, there's the idea of the efficacy, right? Because one of the things I keep saying, you know, there's blood on your hands now because of this information was released. And it's important to note, the information itself is 6 months to 6 years old. And most military things say this will have no effect on day-to-day operations now. It's all old news. But the flip side is the reliability. I mean, these are sort of kids just new in the Army doing their daily reports. And some people say, well, you know, you need to look at these with a particular viewpoint. You can't accept this as absolute truth either. So the spin that comes at the very end is bad, but so can these raw reports because they haven't been interpreted by an appropriate intellect.
Well, one thing that sort of Daniel mentioned a bit earlier about kind of collateral damage, civilian death, friendly fire, all that kind of thing, being that needs to be in the public light, and I agree it does, but the problem is people don't necessarily have the background knowledge to know that these sort of incidents actually happen all the time. In fact, they're so common that it's sort of like when someone makes a prediction about an earthquake happening, it's like guaranteed to happen. These events are guaranteed to happen. Every war, I guarantee you, 12 to 15 to 20 people are going to be killed by friendly fire. It's inevitable. And it's something the military does not like to publicize because it's not that it's embarrassing and that it's horrible, it is, but it's also extremely difficult to explain to an outraged public why this happened. And it's not because the military is callous and cold, it's because it's big, it's a massive organizational effort, and you have soldiers who may have been, you know, on duty for 48 hours straight, and accidents happen. And there's a historical record that you can go back and look at all these accidents, and again, it's unlikely that any of them were done by evil people. It was most likely done by tired, exhausted, or even in some cases, soldiers who are on medication and drugs to stay awake for 48 hours straight.
I think actually you're pointing to another very important aspect to this, because there's actually different waves to this, and you know, so the first wave has come out, these documents have been released, and people are getting their first reaction to them, and a lot of them, as you say, are going to be misinterpreted or interpreted through ideological eyes. But one of the things that they're trying to do, and I've downloaded a copy myself, but I won't admit that on air.
I think you just did.
So what you do is you do NATO mining. So you're right, Ethan. You're not, maybe, although you're a historian, I think you would be perfect for this job. But there are certain people who are actually good at this, and they will go back. And one of the questions they want to ask is, the United States government has spent, I think it's gone up to now, $1 trillion on the Iraq war or something like
over
that?
Over that now.
Right. So, and a large part of that has been in rebuilding, and they keep saying, well, things are getting better. Well, you can do data mining techniques of all this raw statistical data that they have, and you can come up with data analysis that's independent of it. Now, that's not me saying, oh, I looked at a few of these sheets and they look horrible, because you're right, that can be interpreted very off. But it does provide non-military, still academically appropriate people to look at it and give a second opinion of it. And that's where I think it comes in. But unfortunately, that information, that analysis, won't come out for another 6 months or what have you.
Exactly. And I would agree completely that the military and the governments need to be more transparent and treat us like adults, at least the academics, so that we can try to explain to people why, when you do get civilian death, it's obviously tragedy. You know, that's no, of course it's a tragedy, but these things will happen. And that's why war should be avoided, because it's inevitable that you're accidentally going to bomb a school.
So having more information out there will make people more likely to not want to go to war. And I think one of the problems is, like, throughout history, governments have tried to hide as much as they can of civilian casualties, of collateral damage.
It's not in their best interest.
Because of that, like,
exactly.
If you look at, say, people's general view of the Allied countries in World War II, they're not going to think of lots of civilian casualties, even though I'm sure there were plenty of civilian casualties.
The bombing of Dresden, for instance.
Yeah, and like, and it, because it's been hidden for so long, people don't see it as this necessary part of war that is just one more reason why we should think before we leap into a war.
Exactly.
There's one other aspect, and I'm going to go off topic here, so off our line of thought, but the same area. One of the things about WikiLeaks that, as an ethicist and moral philosopher type person, is the fact that it's anonymous. Now, as I mentioned before, a lot of these people are doing it because they think it's a morally right thing to do. And by leaking is actually a form of civil disobedience. But in order to be truly a form of civil disobedience, is you also have to sort of stand up and take the repercussions. You have to be sort of the martyr as well. So do you think, okay, we'll assume WikiLeaks as a practical device may or may not be a good thing, but do you think leaking itself should be an act of civil disobedience? So this sergeant who apparently released these documents and apparently said to the person who squealed on him, I don't mind if they find out, I'm quite willing to go to jail, because he saw the video, the original video, and that's sort of what spurred him to do this, right? So do you think that it's a just thing to do? We just lost
to leak or to
as an act of, do you think leaking should be anonymous, or do you think you should stand up, you know, if you think this is morally wrong, you should have the spirit of your convictions and say, okay, this is wrong.
Well, I mean, it depends on, I guess, who's doing the leaking and what the leaking is about. If it's a, for example, like mob informant where you're most likely going to die, then, you know, you might want to keep secret. But if it's a matter of corporate dishonesty or government dishonesty, in which case you might want your name attached to it because it lends credibility. Like, for example, we have some very credible journalists in Canada who, by lending their name to a story, make it more likely it's going to be believed, as opposed to, like, us. So in that case, maybe so. I think it's ultimately going to be a question of, you know, what the person in particular is thinking. I mean, if they end up going to jail for the rest of their lives, maybe they don't want to come forward with their name attached to it.
Personally, I think from a rational view, it shouldn't matter whether the person who leaked them wants to stand up and be a martyr or wants to hide in the shadows. What should matter is the information held within.
Everyone's looking at me now. As far as my opinion goes, I mean, I'm generally in favor of transparency on the part of governments, and sometimes people have to force governments into transparency because it's generally not in their best interest
sometimes.
To be transparent. Sometimes. There have been times when governments have provided, you know, data. There's Freedom of Information Acts, and they'll comply with most requests. But for stuff about wars or stuff that people might think is morally wrong or extremely sensitive or possibly dangerous in some way, yet nevertheless is so full of information that is important for the public to know so that they understand how their government operates, then I'm all for it. I mean, so it's like, how do you decide whether something is morally right or wrong when it's about information?
Yeah, well, you know, there is one interesting thing that leads to this, and I think helps with making your decision up, is the concept of whistleblowing. Now, there are laws to protect whistleblowers, and not usually so much against governments, but against corporations. I mean, BP's big explosion in the Gulf, a lot of people said you should have known about that, and in theory, if someone had have leaked information. But having said that, there are laws for whistleblowers, they're incredibly weak, and it would, at least, if there were stronger laws, A, with a lot more protection, but also, too, helping to define when is a leak, a whistleblower actually doing the public good, and when is they doing it just because they want to make a quick buck.
I can't wait until the inevitable WikiLeak of a BP internal document showing that something happened, whether it's good or bad for BP. I can't wait until that comes out so we know more. Because they're not going to hand it over.
Documents have already been like leaked and come up in various court cases surrounding the other leak in the Gulf. Yeah. And they knew about it, and there was a pair of dead batteries or something in a control panel.
I remember there was one ridiculous story where someone had some stupid document that said it might have been a blue screen of death. But it's been debunked. It's not true.
So in conclusion, Don, what are we saying about WikiLeaks? Are they doing a good skeptical service, or do we need to apply just as much critical thinking to them as we do to mainstream media? What's the story here?
Well, I think there's actually two big themes here that we can come out of it. One, we talked before about the idea of political skepticism. And as skeptics, we all know we need information in order to make decisions. If we don't have information, then we're just doing things in the blind. So the idea of WikiLeaks to provide us with this information as an alternative source of information, I think, is a necessary aspect to our society to help keep us skeptical about things that are going on in the political thing. The flip side to that, of course, is as skeptics in itself, we have to realize that, you know, sometimes some leaks may be inappropriate and some may not be. And we are trusting that this group is doing what they call ethical leaking or, you know, principled leaking. And we should be skeptical of that, too. So I think WikiLeaks is good, but we do have to keep an eye on them to make sure they stay good. Otherwise, they'll be like Google, which promised to do no evil, and yet they're now in bed with the CIA.
Well, that's unbiased reporting by Don. Well, we're running out of time here on Radio Freethinker, so we should go to our skeptical highlights. And I have one. We have another great CFI lecture coming up. It's on August 13th, which is actually a Friday the 13th. So, Friday the 13th. It's with Christopher DiCarlo, who is an accomplished speaker. He's won numerous awards for his public speaking in Ontario. And he was also voted Humanist of the Year a couple of years back by Humanist Canada. And he's going to be giving a talk called We're All African. And it's a talk based on his recent cover story in Free Inquiry magazine. I encourage you, if you haven't read that issue, to check it out. It's a really great article. And Dr. DiCarlo is a fantastic speaker. We're really excited to have him here for CFI.
Yeah, Ethan and I saw him in Toronto and met him, and he's a really interesting guy, and this will be a great talk.
Right. It's going to be at UBC at 7 o'clock at the Westbrook Building over here, same place we had the PZ Myers talk, so just come right there. You can purchase tickets online at cficanada.ca/Vancouver. And, of course, there's all the Facebook and Meetup links, so check those out as well.
And don't forget, if you're a member, it's free.
Exactly. So, sign up for that. It's going to be a great talk, and I'm looking forward to it. What else do we have coming up?
As I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, I have a talk coming up on August 6th, this Friday, from 1 to 3 p.m. at the Rio Theater on Commercial. It's part of a lecture series called New Bright Lights, and this one is all about magic, lying, and deception. So I'm the third of three speakers. The first one is Lon Mandrake, who's going to talk about the history of magic and teach a trick or two. Rob Hadley is a hypnotist, and he's going to talk about hypnotism and possibly hypnotize a few people. And I'll be giving an updated and improved version of the talk I gave for CFI a couple of months ago, The Lying Brain, which is all about how we deceive ourselves.
I don't believe that.
And as I mentioned, I'm giving away tickets to people who emailed us during this broadcast. I will give free tickets to people who are the first five people to email us after this broadcast at radio.freethinker@gmail.com. And I will also be giving away free tickets to people in the street, whenever I'm anywhere, and on Twitter at Rob Magus.
I guess my skeptic highlight, obviously, this week is going to be WikiLeaks itself. And actually, one of the cool things about WikiLeaks.org is it has a special section for Canada. And Canada has even made one of the top 10, I think it's the top 10, one of the most wanted leaks ever. So this is information they're looking for. And they're looking for a document that discloses the number of authorization to carry permits that the provinces have issued to people. Now, authorization to carry is a firearms permit. Now, this is for permits for things that are like machine guns and rocket launchers. And apparently there are a number of people in Canada who have special authorization to carry these, concealed or not.
How do I get
armed or loaded
launcher?
Yeah, well, apparently, I don't know. But apparently there's a document lying around there with how many people have this authorization in Canada, and it's one of the secret ones.
That sounds boring. I want to know about the Averero.
We all want to.
Yes.
And our conversation about WikiLeaks has inspired me to have two wonderful skeptical highlights. They're not events, really, but I think if one of the things I wanted to talk about, but we ran out of time, is sort of the journalistic issues surrounding WikiLeaks. And there was a podcast I listened to, This Week in Google, the most recent episode. It doesn't seem like it would be anything like this, but a really good conversation on the journalistic implications of WikiLeaks. I would highly recommend that. And also, a fictional book that talks about a lot of issues of government secrecy, which I think gets your sort of philosophical brain going, is the third book in the Ender's Game trilogy, Xenocide, which I would highly recommend. It has a lot of these same issues of information. Obviously, it's not, like, factual, but it makes you think about the moral implications of secrecy and information.
All right, well, we're running out of time. I encourage our listeners to download this episode on our webpage at www.radiofreethinker.com. Remember, no podcast for this week. This is Ethan, your freethinking historian and executive director of CFI Vancouver, saying thanks for listening.
This is Don saying eyes open, minds on.
This is Rob saying have a good evening.
And this is Daniel saying thanks to all our lovely listeners for listening to our wonderful show.
Why, sometimes I'd like to take a peppermint and a switchblade and a Cadillac and throw it all in a fire.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Radio for crazy people and the elderly. Oh, yeah.
The state of hip-hop right now, man, as far as the way I see it, I think right now hip-hop is advancing as far as skills. You got brothers, you know what I'm saying, getting, like, more witty.
There ain't nobody to be pretty for. Let it rattle, let the clatter kill him, let the cataclysm wash. Who really listens? Precision with a verse draws a crowd. Draw a line between an easy melody and peace of mind.
You got DJs doing all kind of crazy shit on the turntables. I like where it's going, and I like, you know what I'm saying, the creative process that brothers is trying to take it to right now.
Rally Rails and Brendan Butter in the place to be. Crimes and Treasons Radio, 101.9 FM, Vancouver. CITR.ca, every Tuesday, 9 till 11.
Dynamite!
Like Stephen King writes horror. If I was a Jew, then I'd like Tom and Nora. I got rhymes for ya, excuse me, senora. Are you a horror? Are you a lady? Is it Eric Boyer or Marsha Brady? Let me know, hun, the deed'll get done. Just listen to position. I'll take my run, then I'll go fishing. I'll get your river flowing. I'm always in the knowing. It comes to giving pleasure. I'm every woman's treasure. I came to work your body, so let me do my job. I've never been laid off, my rhyme is still paid off. Now I'm making records, now I'm making tapes. Steady busting suckers in bunches like grapes. Making all the papes, scooping up the loot. Putting suckers on the run, pull my gun and I shoot. I never been a front, I never been a fraud. I got a natural skill, for that I thank the Lord. Cause I feel blessed, I'm casually dressed. I always got my gun, but I never wear a vest. I'm quick on the draw, like a horse named McCraw from the cartoon. Boom, shalak, lock, boom, shalak, lock, boom.